This week on RSBMB Update, the Garden of Carid feels small, but it touches many facets of the farming skill, from more herb seeds to better compost and a lack of disease, while thieving gets an update to rival safecracking. We also discuss more game jam projects and the sixth age. This is RSBMB Update, episode 908, recorded Thursday, November 10th, 2022. Plower Panthers. Hello, everybody, and thank you for joining us for another episode of RSBNB Update this week, hot off the tails of last week's edition with Mod Pebble talking about accessibility. This week we have an update touching the farming skill, one of the skills in-game that a lot of people misunderstand, but a lot of people also love dearly, including many folks here at the podcast. Tanis is here, as he is each and every week. Welcome aboard.
Thank you, Shane. Yeah, looking forward to talking about this update. It touches a lot of things. It's kind of got a little bit of a Harvey Weinstein going on with it.
Oh, God! Oh, God.
Oh, no.
And that is Earth joining us as well. Welcome.
No.
And you are here because you like farming, but also because we're going to be going through ModJack's lore live stream, and we thought ModJack live stream talking about lore and the sixth age, who better than Earth to have on, who made ModJack cry back when Extinction came out. And there's a wonderful meme for that we'll probably throw in the show notes on this. Welcome, Earth.
That is a ModJack original.
Yes, it was. The reaction to that when we both saw that, I couldn't stop laughing for minutes on that, and I'm sure you were in the same boat, but
incredible.
Yeah. But of course, I am Shane 120888 in game, or Shane with three E's on Fresh Start. Tanis can be found at Tanis79, and Lord Earth is just Lord Earth on Mainscape with the wonderful title, either The Divine or The Rock. Lord Earth The Rock, presently.
I've been rocking The Rock lately.
Yeah, you chose that title because I missed out on it on April Fool's, and you wanted to hold that over my head, just like you wanted to hold the untrimmed farming cape over my head.
I didn't, but I will now.
Okay, all right. And of course, speaking about farming this week, we're going to be talking about the Garden of Carid, in addition to ModJack's live stream, amongst other things. If you want to follow along, we have full show notes available at update.show. But let's just dive into the Garden of Carid, and we got the brief on this last week, and a little bit more before when ModJack talked about it with Mod Shogun on one of his live streams, and we thought we knew everything we did about this update, but as with most RS updates, there's little bits and bobs that are strewn into it that we only learn on launch day for it. But this update in itself does actually encompass a huge scope. But it feels on the level of the Anachronia Accidental update. And I don't know if it's on that size development wise, but how do you guys feel about it in terms of general scope?
I think it's actually a big update, and it actually punches above its weight.
Yeah.
With some of the stuff that it does.
Yeah,
certainly the economy.
Yeah. I mean, the prices of seeds have shot up for this, because everybody wants to, you know, get their daily seed and plant their daily seeds to get the maximum favor out to unlock the Croxical favor. What was wrong with that?
Don't worry about it.
Okay, fair enough. And of course, the herbs initially are going to be slammed, but we have this thing coming up. And
what?
The herbs are going to be slammed in terms of the value. They're going to be slammed to the floor with the amount of herbs coming in this week from everybody using
herbs.
Yes, herbs.
Oh,
but that'll be temporary, though.
Yeah, because double XP is
Canada?
On the way.
I hope so.
Double XP is on the way as of recording this right now. So, hopefully.
And even if it's not, at least they're coming in from the right direction now.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. That's true. And, you know, this update is interesting to me as somebody who has a 99 farming on multiple accounts and soon to be 120 on multiple accounts. I'm a fan of the farming skill, but I think in general, the farming skill is misunderstood, and that's why we're seeing another update around this. And obviously, the genesis of this update was to say that the herbs should come into the game through seeds rather than through PVM drops, which the logical option to that is farming, but they went on that and jumped off the diving board and created a whole farming update around this. When we look at farming, Tanis, you and I were talking about this, that it's one of the more fleshed out skills in the game. And it keeps getting updates.
It's definitely one of the more well-rounded skills. It has a lot of choice in the skill. I mean, yeah. It topped off our tier list.
Yeah.
But what was really smart, I think, about this update was not only did it work on, you know, aspects of the economy, but they were able to use, I think, a lot of things that were already in game in different systems and just kind of move some stuff around, tweak some stuff, broaden it a little bit, and makes it look like a really huge update when it may not be all that, you know, it may seem bigger than what it was in development.
Exactly. That's the sense that I'm getting from this is, you know, one thing I'd like to know is where does this fall in the budget between, say, a Ninja Strike and the accidental skilling update from Mod Stew and Mod Abe back in May. I'd be interested to see where it fits on that spectrum because it feels closer to the accidental skilling update. But just as a recap of the changes that were made, first, herbs are no longer dropped from bosses. The Abyssal Lords, Vire Lords, and Lost Grove creatures had their herb drops reduced. Slayer creatures will still drop herbs, but at a reduced rate. And now here's the big one, and this has saved me. This has saved me upwards of 2.5-3 mil so far this week on Fresh Start. Disease patches no longer die. Disease will just stop growth, and then, of course, now disease can be mitigated on the herbs and the mushroom patches with the pharmacology relic power. And this is for everything in the farming skill. So I'm appreciating this for my magic trees that I'm paying upwards of 500k per seed right now on Fresh Start. So much appreciated on this.
Yeah, I thought it was always kind of dumb that they died like that anyway. But I mean, What do we do about putting all these gardeners out of work, though? I mean, that's, you know, I mean, what are they going to do? Are we going to at least retrain them or something?
You pay them and then they just ensure that they don't get diseased, right? So it's just ensuring that you're able to keep your cycles of your trees going.
You want to subsidize the farmers.
I've been doing that since 2007 with this skill.
No, you've been paying them for work.
Or 2006, rather.
That they've actually been doing.
Yeah, that's true.
That's different.
That's true. That's very different. I know, that's why I said it. I know what happened with farm subsidies in the U.S. in the 80s, but that's a topic for a different show. that's the reason you guys have so much corn syrup in your diet. But
Yeah. Sweet.
Yeah. The Farmer's Catalyst fragment from everyone's favorite quest, Liske's Endgame, now cures disease patches when worn and grants shadow-infused herbs whenever you cure a patch with it. So if you're not using
pharmacology... I cannot believe that you pronounce the H. I'm sorry. I cannot get past that.
Okay.
When pronouncing the H is someone's name.
Yeah.
Herbert Hoover.
Yeah, or Herbie Hancock.
Who? Anyways. Also, this is a fun one. The miraculous treatment from invention has been reworked, and it is now a liquid patch bomb, which works in the same way as the regular patch bombs and is craftable with the invention skill. So this week, folks who had a nice collection of magic parts and living components in their invention bags had a nice payday on Monday. These things were going for 70 to 80K a pop.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and they're actually usable now for farming. 104 inventions, so kind of steep on that. I'll get into why a little bit later they're so important now for the herb runs. Now, here's another good one. The compost bin changes. We didn't know exactly how these were going to work when we saw this in the initial news post, but effectively, they will process things slightly slower, but you don't need to deposit 15 at a time or withdraw 15 at a time. You can put in as many items as you want. You can have some going for normal, some going for super, and some going for ultra. And what happens is you wind up processing 3 compost every 5 minutes. So you don't need to just sit around and wait now. I appreciate this part of the update a lot. Because I had a stack of probably a few dozen Infernus Pyroclasts from my Elite Dungeon 4 adventures this past summer that I had been kind of just sitting on waiting to convert to Ultra Compost, but I've converted all those now, and I have a nice stack of Ultra Compost that it just allowed me to do it for an entire inventory, and I didn't need to wait for the bins to empty themselves. So that's good.
Nice. You know, you're the only person I know that makes Ultra Compost.
I know, that's how you maximize profit in a herb run.
Huh.
I'd make Ultra Compost.
See?
Oh, you... Okay.
It's just the dragon poop, right?
I know. Yeah. I never really wanted to shovel the poop.
It gets a dumb amount of experience too.
Yeah, it does. And fun fact, I actually got my brains farming pet on my level 3 skiller while shoveling dragon poop.
Wow. Funny. Yeah,
exactly. The nightshade patch now functions like a herb patch in that it will now have a minimum of 3 nightshade per, and it's boosted by all the various composts and whatnot. This is very good for Iron Men, especially who are in the PVM game and want to make their own weapon poison, because previously they would have had to go to the Scavit Cave and utilize porters and whatnot and just collect nightshade manually. So this is a huge update in that regard.
It's not that bad. You make it sound like it's this huge ordeal.
No, it's not a huge ordeal. I used to do that before for Yak Track, when the Herb Lord tasks were make X potion instead of get X XP. I always made weapon poison for those because those sold well, because I had the berries and everything sitting, right? So I just needed to grab the nightshade, but now I can just stockpile nightshade
really?
This way. Yeah.
You acted like I was a crazy person because I did that.
No, I've done that before too myself. I'm just glad that I can do it this way now.
Good God.
Also, apparently, I was having a time typing this. Apparently, we have an update or an upgrade as part of this update called Plower Panters.
Excuse me?
Plower Panters, but what it meant was plant power upgrades. Wow, that's a typo from the ages. Plower Panters. But,
yeah, I wasn't sure what was going on there.
This is the core nut of the update. Plant power, the core nut, like, you know, you have a nut like a walnut or an almond, and then you take the shell off and then you get to the core nut of it.
That's not making Plower Panters any better, Shane.
I don't get.
Can you hear the look?
I don't get what's going on here, but that's okay. I don't get it.
Just keep plowing away, Shane.
Yeah, let's just keep plowing through our farms then.
Oh my God.
So these plant power upgrades is what everybody has been talking about. They increase the number of herb seeds planted from a default of 1 to later 2, 4, 7, and ultimately 10. And the interesting part about this, and people were wondering how this would affect yields, and the quick back of the envelope math behind this says that at a high level of farming with Ultra Compost, this represents about a 3x increase in herb yield, from roughly 14 to 42. If you're at north of level 99, you're doing a high level herb, you're using your magic secatures, and you're using Ultra Compost, it takes from about 14 to 42 for the amount of yield that you can expect from a herb patch with this if you go for all 10. Now, of course, with lower compost modifiers, this makes the seeds used have more of an impact. And it's important to note with this that this isn't a linear scale in terms of how this all evens out in terms of the yield. There's some math behind it, but generally more seeds equals better. And that's what I was talking about this week with this update. It would have been nice if there was a default option to say, now that I have all these upgraded, let me just make it so that whenever I plant a seed in the patch, it's always going to use 10, because every time you pop a seed down, it's gonna ask you how many do you want to plant, 1, 2, 4, 7, or 10, and it's always been 10 ever since I unlocked that, as was the case with these. So it's a little bit of feedback on this, and these plant power upgrades are purchasable for 250, 1250, 7500, and 25,000 Cruxacal favor. And you get this favor whenever you harvest herbs, just herbs only. So it entices people to go do these herb runs. And there's also been something else that has been enticing people to do herb runs this week, and that there's a comp requirement behind this update. You unlock the entire store, and with this, they put a one-year grace period on it.
Oh, wow.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Is that abnormally long?
I feel like it's longer than it needs to be, because if you follow the daily herb, you can get this done in 63 days doing one herb run a day. I think a more sane grace period probably would have been 4 to 6 months if I was talking about it. But another thing folks were raising eyebrows about is that apparently your favor right now, and there's talk of maybe changing this, the amount of favor you can get is capped at 25,000 a day. And the reason this is an issue for anybody is because there were people using rapid growth potions to speed through this. The rapid growth potions, of course, come from the beans on the player-owned farm. So the idea behind this is that you would hit this cap and you would no longer get favor. And I've decided that I'm going to let it happen naturally and just do this over time with regular herb runs. I did speed through the plant power upgrades with the rapid growth potions to unlock the times 10 seed use. But do you guys think they should artificially cap this favor at 25,000 a day?
I mean, I don't really think it's necessary. I can't believe people are using
they want their comp back.
They want to, you know, just tick off the requirements. No, they're making
it. They have their comp back. I mean, they're not going to lose it for a year.
It's a grace.
I mean, so this takes 10 days, right, if with that cap? 25,000 a day.
Yeah, and in total you're going to need
250,000.
Yeah, 250,000 if you don't have the outfit already. 204,000 if you do.
And how much money are they dumping into this?
Well, that's the thing. They're beans from the player owned farm, 1,000 beans per rapid growth. So that's easily like a Zygamite, right? So, but I mean, if you've been passively doing the player owned farm, you're going to have a boatload of beans. I have been passively doing it, and I was sitting on about 550,000 beans heading into this update.
And you've cleared the shop too, right?
Yeah, I have cleared the shop numerous times on there. So.
Meant you got all the permanent unlocks.
Oh yeah, and the title and whatnot. Yeah, that was done. That was done a long time ago. So I've just been stockpiling beans, and I have no use for them because I wasn't going to use that to speed to 200 mil, right? So,
yeah, I mean, I think a cap is. I wonder how many people are hitting it.
Everybody who was doing this for comp on day one and two, pretty much. Because it didn't take long to hit this. I hit it, and then I said, okay, I'll just get the rest tomorrow. And it didn't bother me that much, but apparently it was a big bother for people. So,
I wonder if it was... You think it's to, like, try to keep a steady flow of herbs and not have a giant spike.
That would have been my guess, is that it was a way to kind of cap the amount of herbs coming into the economy with this, because at the end of it, I had, you know, over 1,000 Felstock just sitting, and then 1,000 Terramin just sitting, right? Because one of the herbs that came up for me was Terramin on the next day, so I had to plant that. But... Yeah. And that's the interesting bit, is that in terms of the favor that each seed gives, the lower level ones like Guam, Marintil give 10, but the higher leveled ones like Torstal and Felstock give 45 each. But the daily herb, which can be any of them, gives 50. So you could be asked to plant Toadflax or Spiritweed or Harrowlander, even if you're north of 90 plus farming. That one will still give you the best bang for the buck. So that's their way of kind of introducing diversity into the economy for people going for this. And I guess with that and just how this all factors in with the economy, I can see why they would have put the 25K cap in. And you know what's interesting? Talking about this with you guys, initially coming into this, I wasn't in favor of the cap, but now I am.
How do you, because it makes people angry?
No. I don't think they should be making people angry at all, just because I think it's better for the economy this way, because of what Tannis said. You guys for the cap or not after this brief discussion here?
I have no strong opinions.
Yeah, I talked myself into it in about 2 minutes because, you know, I'm for a well-regulated economy.
Oh God.
And it's like you, right, Shane?
And I mean, I guess at the end of the day, it comes down to how many people are going to be impacted by this and how long they have to wait. I mean, it's 10 days, I guess, right? Thereabouts, if they didn't have everything with this. So, versus doing it all in one, I don't know. I've kind of talked myself into it as well, but I feel like I could swing either way on this one, so... Folks looking for a lightning rod of a discussion on this that is going to stick with your preferred opinion from wherever you get it are going to find that here on Update this week for this, which I'm pleased that we're not sensationalizing things here.
Yeah, you would never do something like that.
No, we don't like doing that. We don't like doing that.
Is that the royal we?
No, I'm talking about the podcast in general and the direction that we place on things. But I did do a handy dandy spreadsheet for people who are wanting to consider maxing out the shop.
Oh well, do tell.
Yeah, so the spreadsheet will be linked in the show notes at update.show, and it will take, assuming you have your full farmer's 5-piece farmer's outfit with add-on, it will take 62 herb runs to complete this shop, following the most favored herb, the daily herb, if you will. And that's utilizing all 8 patches, Trollheim, Wilderness. I wish. Jeopardy's never been the same since Alex Trebek is gone, but oh well, that's a topic for another day. That's using all the patches, Trollheim, Wilderness, and of course the Garden of Charid, amongst all the other ones that exist in game as well. And in total, this represents about 4,087 herb seeds that you're going to have to plant. That's how many herb seeds you're going to need to accomplish this. Over 62 days if you do one herb run a day. What was that?
That doesn't really
seem all that bad. And, you know, I know people who would do 3 to 5 herb runs a day. I think my most had been 4 or 5. And
you know,
I,
people, Shane, it's you.
No, I know. I know people in our community who do lots of herb runs more than me. Actually,
people who do things
more than me. Actually, more than me. Actually,
people are sane.
But imagine with this. 3 herb runs a day, you're done in 20 days.
Yeah.
Or 1 herb run a day, it's you know, 62 days. You're going to fit well into that grace period. So with that, once again, I don't see what all the all the fuss is about. But
the hoopla?
Yeah, that's a good way of putting it. I also did do a bit of a calculator as well on the first sheet on this one, where you can enter in the herb favor, the number of seeds per patch you're using, and the number of patches, and then you can specify which of the things you want to pick up, and it will tell you based on that how many herb runs you have to do. And for mine, it's 43 right now where I'm at. So I'm sitting well with this, considering I own the outfit and all four of the plant power upgrades on this. So in reality, it's not too bad, but I'm looking forward to getting more of the updates, more of the upgrades from the shop as we progress through this. So in addition to plant power that increases the number of seeds that you can use, there's also speedy growth, which skips the first growth stage of herb patches, making them grow in 60 minutes instead of 80 minutes. If you want to make your herb runs faster, get more done per day. And I was talking with Malinoric, a community member on this. He's one of the people who does more herb runs than I do. If you combine this with
Call him out.
No, we had a good discussion on this, and he came up with this idea. If you combine a patch bomb, the speedy growth upgrade, and the rapid growth spell with a herb run before a farming tick, it will then be possible to use the rapid growth spell twice and collect your herbs in a single aura, which means that in theory with this, you can have a herb run done from planting the seeds to harvesting in under 20 minutes based on how this goes.
Already.
And this isn't, this is an absolute obscene level of maximization and napkins under the elbows sweaty for farming, and I'm not going to do this.
Napkins under the elbows sweaty. Wow.
Yeah. But
just call out the community, Shane.
No, I'm just saying it's very unlikely that people,
listeners.
It's very unlikely that people are going to go this far with this. I think.
I like that you can, though.
Exactly.
All
right. It's kind of like metronoming your divination training area, right?
That's true. I also get the feeling like you really like math. Oh yeah, metronome your divination. Yeah, it's a thing.
Are you shitting me?
No, I'm serious.
Yeah, people have built 0.6 second metronomes to know when to click for divination training in the Hall of Memories.
Yeah, it's serious XP though.
And it was on this episode that Earth learned that metronomes aren't just for playing music, they're for playing RuneScape.
That's right.
And I was asking you guys before the episode if we should go into this, a recap on farm ticks. About how the games tick. So I'm just going to give a brief overview of how this works and how the farming skill in general works and why the farming skill would be the most affected if Jagex were to ever change away from the 0.6 second game tick. So the way the farming skill works is that each seed has a cycle length. That cycle length can range anywhere from 5 minutes to 640 minutes for some of the biggest crops that you can plant. And with that, we're going to look at the 20-minute cycle in particular, which is for herb runs. Previously, our herbs would have taken 4 cycles to complete, so 80 minutes. And those tick on the 20-minute marks in the hour. So at 0 minutes past the hour, 20 minutes past the hour, and 40 minutes past the hour. So with that, if you were to start your farming aura at, say, 0:58, and then within 20 minutes, you would be able to do the trick that we just talked about previously, factoring in rapid growth and speedy growth from the Cruxical shop. You would, in effect, be able to harvest all those herbs in that 20-minute marker window with your aura. And this is the same thing for any other thing that you plant within the farming skill. Whether they be something as simple as a potato or a magic tree, it's going to follow these same cycles. And the cycle just repeats throughout the entire day with that. And one of the things that I always like to highlight for people when they're talking about the farming skill and they're wanting to really get into farming is that one of the most horrible things that you can do for your farming crops is to be logging in and logging out. Because if you log in and you log out too many times, you're going to wind up resetting your 5-minute tick. Because effectively the way it happens is that whenever you log in, the time between ticks is effectively reset. So if you're aiming at getting these crops done in a really, really timely manner, you want to put the seeds in the ground. And then if you have to go somewhere and do something else, log out after you do that. And don't be logging in and out throughout the entire time period of those crops growing, because that can sometimes mess things up with that. But effectively, what I want to ask you guys now, do you guys have any questions about farm ticks in general?
Not really.
Oh, but I got a pretty good short explanation.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And the Yaris Wiki has an interesting graph showing when they all tick. So I think that is linked in the show notes this week. If it's not, I'll throw that in there. And once you see this, you'll understand how the farming skill works. And I know that was something that was a great area of discussion earlier on, was that should people stay logged in or should they log out sporadically while farming? And I think the general consensus was that you shouldn't do that, because the example they give here is actually for herb seeds. So they math it out here. Suppose a player logs in at 0632 and plants a seed at 0635. The growth window for that next herb will happen between 640 and 645, and then the player will reach a growth tick every 5 minutes after logging in. So if they log in at 632, that means your ticks are at 637, 642, so on and so forth. And this is really getting into the weeds of the farming skill and getting into the weeds of the update. But I mean, hey,
yeah.
I guess if we're getting into the weeds, this is going to be a week to do it when we're talking about farming, right?
And I'm going to kick you.
I'm sorry.
See, now this makes me feel like we could use a farming timer.
Exactly, right? Yeah. And for a lot of time, there are folks like myself and people who were highly invested in farming who didn't want that to happen because that was a part of the magic behind the skill.
Yeah, but
the what? The magic?
Dark magic, perhaps.
Explain.
Well, just that, you know, there were these things that were happening behind the scenes, and we weren't sure if this sort of thing was good to lay out, because it would have effectively, I guess for some of us, like myself, taking the fun out of the skill, because you initially we had no idea of how it worked. So we go back to launch week of farming where it felt like everything was growing at random, but then we learned how it worked behind the scenes. And it was a question of, you know, should that knowledge be released? And we're talking about 2008 to 2010 at this point. And I think fast forwarding to 2022, the general consensus is that knowledge should be dumped on the table whenever it's available to be. If that
I think
makes
so.
Sense.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. But that's speedy growth and your quick recap on farm ticks. And as anybody knows, that probably makes farming one of the more complicated skills in the game when you factor the farm ticks into things, when everything else is based on your actions and not necessarily the server's. So with that, the next thing that comes from this update is Bountiful Harvest, which increases the harvest from grapevines, bushes, cacti, and fruit trees, as well as it's effectively a 50% chance to gain +1 yield from every harvest action, so that's quite substantial. There's also buckets all the way down, which means that buckets are no longer required to take compost from a compost bin. And Quick Sense, which reduces the number of ticks per craft for incense sticks by 50%. And I know I used to make incense sticks for money, and that was always a pain point, just how long they took to make. And there's even one in here for PVMers for 35,000 Cruxical credit. Incense sticks effects are no longer removed upon death, meaning if you die, your incense will continue on. Right, because, you know, some of these incense sticks are super expensive, right? So if you die and you just put your poison incense on, well, you're kind of sad at that point. Then we got the farmer's outfit at 10,000 favor per piece, which we already know about, and then the honorary druid title, which unlocks the druid title for 50,000 favor. And that's all I got on the farming side of this update, and like we said, it's pretty expansive compared to everything else that we've been talking about recently, so it feels like it touched more than it did. So, you guys have anything else on farming, or should we move on to thieving?
I'm ready to move on to thieving.
Okay.
I have one minor thing. It's not really about this update, but
yeah,
this is going on my farming run earlier. And I was doing trees, and I was paying for the protection money, extortion. I have to pay these farmers. They don't disease my crops. The green fingers are on, so every time I'd click pay, it asks me to confirm again. And that drives me nuts.
Right, and if you're clicking the context menu to pay, it should probably just assume that you want to pay at that point and just give you the confirmation.
Yeah,
do you wish
they
to pay 25
made that change
coconut?
A little while ago where you didn't have to confirm it each time, and that kind of
okay. Yeah, that almost sounds kind of ninja strikey territory. If anybody out there wants to make a ninja strike on that,
please.
But before we move on to thieving, I'm going to just
so minorly annoying.
Yeah, I get you. I get you. Before we move on to thieving, I'm going to thank our Patreon supporters for this week. I'd like to thank. Well, we have to. They do so much for us. This week, I'd like to thank Amos Reed, Andrew C, Arvids L, Beekeeper Steve, Big Huge Rat, Bryflex, Chunk the Monk, Diana, Drama Free, Ello Matey, Flazaman, Free Milk, Jacob G, Jade Gizmo, Jason S, Jeebus, Jesse W, Keski, Ling01, Mohan V, Nate the Great, Nick G, OTR Gamer, Parnassius, Ricky A, RS Nerd Herd, Samuel FL, Skiotan, Scott DS, Shirt Pants, Stub Eve, The Naked Captain, Tim M, Tom V, and Zant. Thank you, everybody, for your support. It truly means the world to us, and if you're wondering what we're talking about, you can find out more at patreon.com/rsbnb, where we just recently put up our most recent monthly bit regarding Dailyscape Part 3 and how dailies that people feel like they need to do each and every day could be made better in RuneScape. Sirion, Thaxi, and myself sat down. We had about an hour-long discussion and talked about how dailies could be better. I know, shocking, getting those two together with me on the monthly bit and keeping it to just a hair over an hour. I was surprised when we managed. I was surprised when we managed to do that, but we did, and it was a very, very well-produced episode. So if that sounds interesting to you, If that sounds interesting to you, you can access that and the entire back catalog of monthly bits, including our famous tier list, the Dailyscape tier list, the PVM tier list, and the skill tier list, among so many others, at patreon.com/rsbnb for as little as $1 a month. And if you do that, you also get a special mention in our show notes for helping fund the cost of RSBNB and production of the podcast. We also do have a VIP tier where you'll receive a special rank on our Discord channel and a mention on the podcast at the start of the month, plus high-quality stereo versions of the show for $3 a month. And if you want to give the ultimate gift, you can pay $5 a month and you'll receive a shout-out each and every week on the podcast and gain exclusive access to the outtakes we use to make the clip show at the end of the year, which there will probably be some from that episode. So if any of that sounds interesting to you, or you just want to show your support for the podcast or access some of those wonderful monthly bits, you can check them out at patreon.com/rsbnb. Thanks so much, everyone.
Thanks, guys.
And it should note, I should note that Earth was actually on the PVM tier list one. That was a fun episode. Going back to that, we have to do a part two of that one at some point about identify good and bad bosses. But that'll.
And I need to come into that a little more prepared. Not listening to only Shane for information, because I was misled
about the Archglacier. Apparently,
now. So, not to draw attention to one of our Patreon listeners in particular, but there's one I highlighted. Can you pronounce that one again for me?
Drama-free.
Drama. It's drama.
I've been saying it that way for months, and the person has not raised an eyebrow about it, to my knowledge.
Well, I hope they listen to this, and I hope they do raise an issue.
And if anybody does
call you out,
and if anybody does raise an eyebrow towards the pronunciation of your name, please do DM me on Discord. I am Shane.
No, DM me, and I will make it better.
Oh, there's Earth exerting his RSPNB influence again.
He can't help it. Shane's Canadian, you know. I mean,
we pronounce things differently.
Look. Yeah, like the H in herb, psychopath.
Oh boy. All right, the thieving side of the update. I was very fortunate to have some insight from thieves on this. And just to recap, that's his name. He's got 200 mil thieving on multiple accounts. He loves the skill. And founded a thieving clan back in the day. So the former Sticky Fingers relic power is now baseline feature of the skill, which allows you to automatically pickpocket victims with a single click, kind of like the Prifels, but not entirely like that. The new Sticky Fingers relic power will speed up the rate at which you automatically pickpocket by 50%. As such, the master camo outfit will no longer auto pickpocket, but retains the increased chance of success in stun avoidance. And the Desert Phoenix will no longer require you to have completed the hard desert area achievements to automatically pick feathers. So,
nice
thieving changes all around for pickpocketing. I feel like this kind of brings the skill into the 21st century. And, you know, there's a question to be asked about what thieving provides to the game. It feels kind of like agility in that sense, that it's kind of siloed into its own house on that, but that's a topic for another show. You guys have anything you want to open with in relation to the thieving side of this update?
I think it's been great. I've been getting punched in the face all week.
A formula here to prevent that.
Oh, okay. Yeah. But no, I this was the highlight, or one of the highlights of Prif, right? Was to be able to pickpocket like this. And I think this is, it just adds so much. And it gives you other things. There's a
it's kind of an accessibility update too, isn't it?
Yeah. And in a lot of ways, because traditional pickpocketing was very difficult, very click intensive. This is just much, I mean, it's just a huge quality of life change. I was very fearful that people would be like, it's too easy. But actually, you know, I think it's been a really good change. And it just brings more choice, because like I was saying, like there was a very specific path in thieving. You do this, you do that, you move this, you know what I mean? And now there feels like there's a little bit more choice.
Maybe this raises thieving on our tier list. No, it was... And this is a spoiler for people who haven't listened to that episode. We rated thieving A tier. The question is, would this bring thieving to S?
Oh, that's such a hard one.
I know.
Because I don't know if it fundamentally changes the criteria we were analyzing it with, but I mean, I guess it does make gameplay better.
Yeah.
If Yeah. So
yeah,
I don't know.
Yeah. Well, that's something I guess for us to consider. The panel on that episode was you, me, and Bears, and Sirion. So I will put out a feeler on that and see what everybody has to say. So the Kruxical Knights, there's two targets. It's Kruxical Druids and the Kruxical Knights. So the Kruxical Knights are the ones we're going to do first. These have an 83 base thieving requirement on them. Now, for them to be viable as an endgame thieving training method, you need either the full Master Camo outfit or the Traherne Exoskeleton. You also are recommended to have the Ardoian Hard Diaries completed, 97 plus thieving, Crystal Mask, and Light Form. Those are, of course, from Within the Light, and their prayer drain can be mitigated by Grace of the Elves and completely mitigated through Dark Facet of Grace. Now, of course, Legendary Five Finger isn't absolutely required for this, but it ups the AFK time on this to 5 minutes, so that's probably something you'll want for this Tanis. The Cheeky Monkey Pet absorbs one hit per minute, and the shock absorbers are also the Cheeky Monkey in consumable format from that. So when you combine this all together, you really need that full camo, the diary, 97 plus thieving, crystal mask, and light form. When you combine all those together, you wind up with a thieving XP gain of about 1.3 mil per hour, which is right on par with lean forward active safe cracking.
Mm-hmm.
And when you sum all this up, the best way to describe these is very high level master farmers. And once again, it gives you a choice so that you're not locked into that routine of absolutely having to go to safes and be tick perfect with doing active safe cracking. And
now, I think it's fair too, because those are such high requirements.
Oh, yeah. Like,
serious.
Yeah, like to min max
requirements
this
in there.
Yeah, exactly. Like, this isn't something that you're going to be able to pick up and, you know, level 83, hey guys, we're getting 1.3 mil XP an hour. No, you have to invest quite a lot into the setup.
Oh, yeah.
And they're a good source of herb seeds. And one thing I will say as a caveat, if you have the seed aside active on your tool belt, make sure you turn off herb seeds on this, because there was somebody in the clan this week who was trying to thieve from these and was wondering where their seeds were and realized that, oh, our seed aside is still on.
Uh-oh.
So the seed aside was eating the seeds from this. So just take note of that. These also have a chance to drop Sand Siege, which are the consumable teleports to the Garden of Kared. Universal Supreme Growth Potions, which is interesting. Previously, those were only a part of Premier Club 2018. And then the Mystical Sand Seed, which is a permanent teleport that goes to the Garden of Kared, which I acquired a few of on day one, because if you're going to be doing any herb runs, you're going to want one of those to get to the garden in the easiest way possible. So that's what the drop table looks like on those. We'll get to the catalytic anima stone and elemental anima stone after on the runecrafting side of this, but it looks like thieving did get an update on this to, I don't necessarily say dethrone safe cracking, let's just say had a choice to whether or not you want to do safe cracking. Now, as for the lower level Kruxical Druids, they're not really viable for XP gain, but don't really need the spells and prayers for maximizing them. You're not going to make a ton of money from them, looking at the Anima Stones in particular that you get, and the seeds are going to drop in price. The mystical seeds you get are going to drop in price that you get from this. But over time, these might be a lower leveled option for people to earn seeds and money make with, given depending where seeds are going to land at the end of the day on this. So overall, the opinion from Thieves on this part of the update, and I'll state again that Thieves has 200 mil thieving on multiple accounts. He said this is a very good addition to the skill. It has extremely high requirements for it to be remotely viable, which is unlike safe cracking. So for people who feel that this devalues thieving, it was already devalued with safe cracking from that perspective, just in effect making it one of the 120s that people genuinely perceive easier to walk into. And he said, is it the perfect update? No, but it will at least offer an alternative to safe cracking, which was previously best in slot for the entire skill. And I think that's what we have learned time and time again when we talk about skills and we talk about rating skills on tier lists and talk about which skills need to be updated. The skills that have the greatest amount of diversity behind them in terms of training methods are the skills that shine and stand up. And by adding this to thieving, I think you scratch an itch that some people might have had. Because I know for me, if I was to ever go for 120 thieving, I wouldn't want to stand safe cracking for that long, you know? So
yeah, I mean, I hate that safe cracking gets so much hate because I think it's fun. I like it.
Yeah, I mean, we go back to the safe cracking episode as one of those, you know, golden updates of 2018 alongside, you know, deep sea fishing, the clue scroll updates, and the player owned farm. There were so many good updates that year, and I feel that's when we entered this RuneScape's second golden age, and safe cracking was part of that because we had these updates that were fully fleshed out. They were thought of in terms of providing the AFK component, the lean back component, if you will, but they also had the lean forward component, which you pointed out to us on the podcast, which was, I believe, you, me, and Sirion. And the backstory behind that was that Sirion and I were, you know, just doing this aimlessly, and you, the person who is visually impaired, uses a screen magnifier, said, hey, if you click when the click the safe when it flashes, it goes faster and you get more XP per hour.
Yeah.
That was absolutely hilarious, but this is another option to that. And I mean, this seems like precisely the kind of mobile gameplay that you would want looking at this. With the full setup, including legendary five finger, you're looking at potentially 5 minutes that you before you need to click on these thieves, or on these knights, rather. So
yeah, that's been the only kind of hard part I found so far, was on the mobile side, because it's a little bit harder to right click when you're playing mobile.
Oh, but it's not a left click option. I didn't know that.
Well, I haven't gotten to my thieving's not been high enough. I can get to a left click option so far. So that may come, but for right now, you know.
All right. I'm
still thieving men and women, and
okay.
After first click.
All right, fair enough. And then the final part of this update is for runecrafting: catalytic and elemental anima stones increases the rune multiplier by 2. So just adds 2 to it for when you are runecrafting runes. And it's important to note with this, when we were wondering about this last week, the power burst of sorcery has no effect on the additional runes produced, so it's only the base that will be multiplied by 2 with the power burst. So this just adds an extra 2 on top of that, and these require 1 stone per essence used, and maybe over time this will be a way, I guess, to see if people want to craft more water runes, perhaps, because maybe that would be a way to, you know, bring more water runes into the game. Because I know those have notoriously been in a pinch since the Sentistan spells came out. But overall,
yeah, I mean, they could undo the little thing they did with the Shattered Worlds.
Yeah. Yeah. That was hilarious, wasn't it?
Yeah.
When they added that
what?
When they added Shattered Worlds to the game, it was possible to one surge from the bank chest at Shattered Worlds directly to the water altar. Yeah. So as a result, what they did with that is they rotated something at Shattered Worlds to make it so you had to go around it instead. But yeah. But that's the Garden of Charid. That's our November skilling update. I have to say, and you know, I'm biased in this, I am very pleased with this update. It's got me doing herb runs again for profit and completing things over time. How about you, Earth?
Say that again?
How do you feel about this overall?
I love it.
Yeah, it's a good skilling update. And it shows...
the nerf changes in particular are going to be very interesting. And I mean, I just did, granted, sample size of one, but it didn't look like they decreased the rate that you get it normally. So this is just a complete bonus to it. I love that.
Yeah. Tannis, final thoughts?
I love the update. I really do. This is one of the highlighted skilling updates of the year. What they did with Deaving, just it's just beautiful. It's given me something else to start going for and fresh start now. I might actually go for a Thieving 99, which wasn't on my list.
Go for the 120, because there's no other cape like that that has the pink particles on it.
Yeah, I don't know if I want to wear a pink particle cape, but I would like to get the pet. I love that pet.
All right, fair enough.
The trash panda, right?
He's like the little raccoon with the bag.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Trash panda.
Trash panda. Yeah. There you go.
All right. Also this week, we have the Civil War Part 3, the mini quest that, and this is spoilers going ahead for about the next 5 minutes or so. This mini quest ends the Zamorakian Civil War. And the mini quest requirement on this one, after you go talk to Trindine, who says the update is that there is no update, which I thought was kind of meta, given the fact we've had no update weeks recently. But I thought that was kind of fun. But the mini-quest requirement on this is to assist politics with analyzing herbs and plants. And to do this, you need to collect 250 Cruxical Favor and buy the Power Planter Tier 1 reward. And after you do that, you report back to Trindine and you watch another recording. And the recording shows Kirill, Sutsaroth, and Nomura defending against Bilrock's forces. But Nomura and some of the Zamorakians later approach Kirill, and then Kirill, after this, realizes that he's going to be being betrayed in very short order, comes to an agreement where Bilrock and Nomura banish Kirill back to Infernus. So Kirill goes bye-bye. And then, wrapping this up, Nomura wants her sister, the other Twin Fury, to be released from the Diabolus Phylactery, but Moya says that there's more work to be done, and the hint to that is now that the Zamorakian Civil War is over, Bilrock will soon turn their firepower towards the south and the human kingdoms, which is presumably where we'll pick up in our next quest and move into the next storyline. And I was quite shocked actually to see this, because I didn't actually anticipate that we would be seeing the end of the Zamorakian Civil War in a mini quest of all things. Mm-hmm. So they're just going very quick with the story on this. And I mean, I can't say that's a bad thing, because they did promise 6 months or less, which is less than the 3 years or so it took from Carapax's arrival to the end of the Elder Gods stuff. So I think that's good. It's good to scratch that itch, and we'll look forward to what happens in the quest when that arrives. And of course, when quest week comes on that, we'll probably do a summary of the three mini quests, because they were truly mini in nature, and that the first one was kill 144 demons, the second was complete 4 wilderness flash events, and then the third one here was to unlock the first power planter update. So there is a reward for this, and that's tier 5 of the Infernal Puzzle Box, which is good for people who go on Becriminal Bolt runs, which I'll get to why that's the case in just a second. So with this, you get 60% reduced environmental damage while in Furnace, 13% damage reduction, and 8% increased damage dealt to monsters in the wilderness. You will also fletch Becriminal Bolts faster, a 50% reduction in time it takes to fletch both the shaft and the bolts themselves. And when you're near a Bloodwood tree in the wilderness, the side effects of wilderness threat will not target you. So it allows you to access those wilderness backrimal trees a lot easier than you were able to do before. So that's Infernal Puzzle Box Tier 5. And I guess one can only assume that at the end of this Infernal Puzzle Box, Tier 6 will be making all these passive, perhaps, based on the trend of the past. So this is why you do your quests, folks.
Right. I hear you, Shane.
I know. I sold you with the Bat Criminal Bolts, didn't I?
Yeah. Just say yes. Let him
yes.
have it.
Yes.
All right. We have a few patch notes this week. With Fresh Start Worlds, the Inverted Slayer Master Cape's teleport can now be used from the backpack, and the box of banking can now be deposited in the bank using the deposit all option. Then we have a couple of errors that have been fixed, particularly with casting the Split Soul special attack with the Essence of Finality. It will no longer fire an offhand auto attack with excessive range. Makes me wonder what kind of range we were talking about there.
Six.
Yeah. Six is, I think, the range of a regular crossbow. Oh, okay. Okay, fair enough. I thought you were actually coming from Data there. But
no.
I
would never talk out my ass.
Right. Next, Zuck's insta-kill.
That a veiled criticism of me.
No, not at all. Next up,
that's what I thought.
Zuck's insta-kill attack will no longer kill players who teleport out of his arena at the last second.
You thought you were getting away.
I know. I saw a few of those on launch week last year when he arrived. People teleporting to Wars Retreat, then just dying right at the spot there.
That's hilarious.
And the daily purchase limit for Treasure Hunter keys in the Oddman store has been changed to 10 from 60.
God. Damn. All right.
Yeah, well, we had noticed this was coming last week, so anybody who wanted to buy should have bought. I mean, obviously on this one, too many keys going into the economy with Oddments, people sitting on Oddments, that sort of thing, kind of lines up, I guess, in that Treasure Hunter keys should be the premium currency and they should not necessarily be able to be bought for economic reasons with oddments. That's what this reads as to me, like it or not.
Yeah, I guess.
Like, I'm not saying that's a good thing or a bad thing. I'm just saying that's the way it is. So
yeah, that probably is.
Yeah. And I mean, 60 felt like a lot, didn't it?
It did. I don't know how you would have gotten that many. I don't know. That seems like it. It would have been a lot of keys.
Prior to last Christmas and the Green Santa hat, I had like 250,000 oddments on my account.
Damn.
And that went down to about 25,000 after that.
Yeah, I mean, I guess you didn't use them much.
No, I didn't. And whenever Rare would come up on Treasure Hunter, let's go buy some keys, right? With oddments and see if we can get that rare. So, in any case, let's talk about the live stream. Actually, no, let's talk about the October Game Jam first. Then we'll get to Mod Jack's live stream. We got some more Game Jam projects that were unveiled, and there were some that weren't tweeted out online. And this first one's an interesting one. Allow the pausing of auras while you're logged out, except for the Green Fingers aura. And this is from Mod Frosh, who says that I know that players have been asking for this feature for years, and a lot of you aren't able to take full advantage of your auras at the moment due to real-life responsibilities that get in the way of long, uninterrupted play sessions. This change would motivate players to make more use of their auras, even if they don't have the time to play in one sitting. So it would mean you log out, your aura would pause, with the exception of Green Fingers, which I think
that's
makes sense.
Really cool. Yeah,
I think that one makes
really
sense.
Really cool.
Then we got a series of quest improvements from Mod Stew, particularly for Ikhlorin's little helper. And the idea behind this said it would smooth out some of the intermediate quests' rougher gameplay edges, considering features that have since been added to the game, as well as contemporary quest design guidelines. So an example on this is that you'd see the edges of the trap doors in the pyramid, and if you fall into a trap door, it would remain open for a couple minutes and would be visible to other players. RNG failure mechanics would be toned down. For example, the high likelihood of even with 99 agility that you fall into the pit near the end of Klenter's pyramid, which would mean that you would have to repeat the pyramid's traps and hazards, which, you know, makes total sense. If you have 99 agility, you should not be failing.
Yeah.
Also, since items on your tool belt are now used and Metaphos exists, you could get sap from nearby Acadia trees and generally the information you need on the critical path and your interactions would be more mobile friendly with this. And Modstu has even provided pictures for this. And he says that I picked Ichlarin's Little Helper because it has some appealing rewards like the Sophonim Slayer dungeon, double Slayer points via smoking kills, but also mechanics which are likely to frustrate non-questers or encourage the habit of following a quest guide. And the whole experience could be significantly improved with a few quick content fixes rather than requiring a full rework. And isn't that the truth, that so many people just jump to the quest guide because they don't want to, you know, feel the pain of going through what is at this point probably a 15-year-old quest?
Yeah. Not gonna stop me though.
No.
No. I'm a guide.
Oh, and this was a Modstu update. Removed the more egregious requirements from the Wandering Gaul mini quest. That was Modstu.
My years of waiting paid off.
Yeah, previously it was exactly 752 obsidian shards. Recently donated Tockle to the fight cauldron. You would have needed a Tockle Zoe, uncharged equipped, and do not wear a fire cape or any kiln cape. And those ones I just mentioned were struck out, along with don't wear any obsidian armor. Now it's just Brink of Extinction and partial completion of Desert Treasure.
How many obsidian shards was it on release?
752.
No, it was not.
I don't
know that.
Because
it's the rune date divided by 10 or something.
Oh boy. Okay. So it was probably way less then, wasn't it?
Uh-huh.
Okay, so that's why that...
My years of waiting paid off, because that has kept me... That has been, at one point, the only mini-quest I haven't done. There are more now, but...
Wow. And here's one that really makes me jump up and down. Skill peer accommodations, options for Nastroc to block XP in skills of your choice and to reset XP in a skill you've overleveled. This is pending design approval. The idea would be could say that you could block XP from certain skills, and it would say then that you have blocked 89 defense XP, for an example. That'd be really nice to have.
You could bring back your...
bring back the skill peer and not need to worry about anything. Yeah.
It's so interesting seeing your evolution on how you feel about pures over the years, Shane.
Well, hey, I gotta have a way to get an untrimmed green farming cape, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Build a time machine, go back in time.
Oh, I wish. I wish. Also released
They called it Fresh Start World.
That's true. That's true. Except it's an olive green farming cape in this one.
Yeah.
And also released on October 24th, adjusted the position of some quests in the timeline sort for the quest list. I knew these were Modstu updates when I read them in the patch notes.
Had that feel to them, didn't they?
Yeah, they did. They did. Modstu is wonderful. Daemonheim Archaeology, a new Daemonheim Archaeology and mini site from Mod KOC. And comment is this, is that while working on potential Dungeoneering Ninja fixes, I was reminded of how many mysteries and narrative plot threads were left unanswered by the shift in development for the skill. So given the success of archaeology at the Centistian mini-site, plus the fact the skill has lots of frustrating level gaps, specifically around the 70s and 80s, I thought there was a way we could solve this problem using Daemonheim. So what he did was make a full mini site for the Daemonheim area.
And yeah, I can't wait to see what those mysteries are going to be.
I know, but it just be careful. It hasn't received official sign off yet.
Oh, yeah, because he's game champ. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
cross-world presence from Mod Sammy and Mod Ashers. So with this, player avatars would be beamed across the abyss and replicated on separate worlds, so what you would be doing on one world could be seen on another. And with this, you'd also be able to chat with people from different worlds. Interesting.
Okay.
The only things that would not work are interactions like trade, dueling, and the assist system.
Oh, they want to get rid of the feeling that the game is abandoned.
Yeah, I guess, based on that. And if you right-click on somebody, it would say that the person, it would say their name, and then in brackets, W, whatever the world number would be. I honestly feel like this one's kind of confusing, and perhaps they shouldn't do this.
I think it would be great.
Okay.
But I don't see how it's technically possible. Without adding a fuck ton of load to the server.
Well, they got...
I'm afraid of,
but
yes.
They already got... Yeah, and see, I guess that's something they'd have to go through, but they already got pictures here of it showing it working.
Yeah, you can do that with two people. Now, multiply that out to scale.
All of the worlds,
all of the people.
Yeah. I mean, you just gotta think back to any of those events where you had JMods, like, doing stamps or whatever, and everyone would show up and nothing moved. It was the lag.
It would only be certain shared areas. So when you leave the bounds of a shared area, your avatar is no longer shared cross-world and remote players would no longer be able to see you. However, you would still be able to peer into the shared areas and see remote players there from a distance, effectively making the entrance to the Grand Exchange Archway a more populated zone.
I mean, I do like that.
So it would only be specific areas that they'd do it for, not the entire world.
I do really like that.
And then they say why not work on bigger servers or server technologies such as layering or sharding, which would allow players to connect to different servers seamlessly. And while ideal, that would involve fundamentally redesigning how RuneScape works. They say it's very important to say that this technology isn't ready and is not on the roadmap, and it's more of a technical demonstration of what they could potentially achieve. And then we have Krosis QOL improvements from Mod Desert. And the idea behind this is that while taking Krosis in my spare time, a few things were annoying to me, so I decided to improve on them. And this includes preventing auto-collect running under most circumstances. I'm not sure what that means. The scavenging legendary pets seat aside Charming Imp will no longer try to succeed at taking the boss loot to your backpack. And they will still convert things to XP, they just won't fill up your backpack. Also, allowing of examine statuses and storages to show more information. That seems like an accessibility feature that we would jump up and down about.
Yeah.
Allowing players to rot fungi without interrupting the current action. And allowing bladed dive onto the skilling nodes. Yes, that was always an issue, bladed diving around the Krosis arena. And then he says, plus there's a teaser around adding bladed dive to archaeology. Ooh, interesting. Okay.
Why would it be?
I don't know.
I'll have to think about that.
Well, I mean, I guess that would be just bladed diving around archaeology sites without running into the dig sites themselves. We also got board games around Gilinar. We already talked about this one. I'll basically bring the Burthorpe Games Room with you and allow you to play the board games from anywhere in the world. That one's from Mod Luma. And then combat consistency from Mod Sponge, which is very general on the top, but goes deep into this of removing some of the inconsistencies from combat. And this includes hit chance buffs being very hard to understand because there's no determined order for them. And the example he gives, using a 50% hit chance when equipping a Reaver's Ring, which is -5%, and summoning a Nihil, which is +5%, you'd probably still expect it to be 50% hit chance. However, it would actually be 49.8% chance. So with this, buffs would be rewritten to apply in a consistent order, make it so that buffs are totaled and then that total is applied once, as in the case of the Reaver example. Removed outdated exceptions to buffs such as salve amulets not working against all undead creatures like the Barrows, or Darklight not working against Kirill in God Wars 1. That would be huge, allowing that to work there.
Yeah.
And reducing the complexity of the system so that bugs are less likely to occur for new modifiers. And he also began doing the same for the damage calculation part of the combat system, which includes reducing the overall complexity from the developer side so that then they can look at condensing all damage modifiers down into a fewer areas. And alongside this, giving the Berserk aura a small rework, which would include extending the duration to an hour, ensuring the damage boost is now applied well, damage boosting ultimates are active like Sunshine, removing the stat boost and removing the accuracy boost. That's interesting. Very interesting. So, I think the two that I'm most looking forward to for this one are the Daemonheim Archaeology and Mod Stew's Skill Pier enhancements. Those are the ones that I'm looking forward to on this. How about you guys? If they make their way to game.
Combat consistency and the cross-world presence I'm really excited about, intrigued about.
Even though presence is just a technical example at this stage.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. How about you, Tanis?
I forget which one I got excited about.
Okay.
He told me to hold my horses.
Must not have been that excited.
Yeah, right? Oh, no. That's, yeah.
Oh, it was the Daemonheim archaeology in that.
It hasn't
received design approval yet.
Yeah, that one.
We love our archaeology mini sites here. All right. And now we get to Mod Stew's live stream. Or sorry, not Mod Stew's live stream, Mod Jack's live stream. So many live streams, so many J-Mods. Hard to count them all. So this was a discussion on why the gods left RuneScape at the end of the Sixth Age. And where we start with this, he did a bit of a talk about why they talk about updates before they arrive, like the farming update, as an example. But he can't do that with lore, because if they were to do that, people play the story content to get the story. They don't want to have their story spoiled. They don't want to be told the ending of it. So the idea behind that is that he needs to explain what's happening with the story content after the fact. And because of this, the first initial theory that Mod Jack has said it was going around the community is that Mod Jack doesn't want to tell stories about the gods, but that's not entirely true. What effectively happened is that they couldn't continue to tell the stories of RuneScape's environment, the medieval fantasy game, which kind of makes sense, because if you look at everything post The World Wakes, it's always been that high fantasy world-ending kind of stuff, right? Mm-hmm. Whereas I think we all agree that RuneScape is at its best when we're doing those 2007-2008 era of quests, right? I think you said it on that quest tier, the 21 years of quests, or that 2007 or 2008 it was the golden year of quests or something, I think, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So this kind of allows them to get back on that path. And in relation to that discussion about the gods, Mod Jack said that if he had it his way, he would be doing second or third age God War stories, grandiose war stories, he said. And the problem was that the stakes of the Sixth Age were set higher than something that RuneScape was about. The planet was at risk. Then the universe was at risk. And this then limited the stories that were being told and the characters that could be involved. And he said that if you wanted to tell the story of somebody losing their shoe, you could do that probably. Or you could do something like the Heartstealer quest or the Slime quest. But if you wanted to do something relating to a kingdom, at that point, the gods, if they were on the world, would want to get involved. And the way he said it is that if there was a dragon or an evil wizard that was threatening an area, Sarah Doman could then just come in, click his fingers, and fix the problem. So that was one of the problems with the gods being there.
Mm-hmm.
And he says that what was also dealt with throughout the Sixth Age storylines, was a series of unfulfilled promises. And I thought, wow. Yeah. Wow.
Oof.
And he said, when it comes to promises for gods in the Sixth Age, there was a lot of promise, especially with relation to Armadil. And he said, what should be thought about was what was going on good in the storyline, or did it seem like it was going somewhere where you, the player, were excited? And I think we can all, with that frame, say that we got a lot more excited about the potential angles at which this story would have went than what it did. And that's not to say where it went is bad. It's just it's easier to get excited about something that you're cooking up in your head, I think.
Well, I think people were expecting a quest.
The quest that shall not be named. Let's just say write a passage at this point in time.
Yeah, I think that's what people were expecting when it came to Armadil.
Yeah, and when you look back at all the Sixth Age stuff, Armadil really didn't get his time in the sun. It was, you know, Zamorax and Sliskay. Really, amongst others.
Yeah. So. And they didn't even kill a god.
No, but Armadil did in World Event 2.
Yeah, I know.
And, you know,
the short end of the stick.
But that really raises the question, too, about, you know, what could have been Bandos' story if he wasn't killed off there, right?
Yeah, that was...
That was an interesting one, but I think we found out a bit of that through Zanuck and the archaeology stuff at the end. So,
I mean, we did. I'm not a fan of God killing because it's just so antithetical to the whole idea of a God, but I digress.
Yeah. And you know, that's the thing. Gods became the characters of the game. And you know, it was in that era of TV where TV shows were killing off their characters willy nilly. Mm-hmm. So RuneScape, I think, kind of went in on some of that early on in the Sixth Age. And what Mod Jack expected from this is what people were actually excited for was what it seemed like was coming next. It's not what actually came next. And he said it's not that what was working was working. It's that what was working was promising something more to come and hit the nail on the head. Specifically in relation to Armadil fans in the Rite of Passage.
Mm-hmm.
Then he said that the Sixth Age didn't allow Jagex to deliver on what they were implying they were going to be promising. And we can go back to 2013 for this. I'm sure we all remember when RuneScape 3 came out and Gothics kicked the bucket and all that. That it seemed like there was going to be, you know, this storyline that was going to progress and move forward. But it took us a long time to get resolution on the Sliskay's game arc with that. And
yeah, I mean, that's why I'm glad that they've switched gears with that, because I'm kind of done with the 6 to 10 year story time. I mean, it's too long. It's too much.
Yeah. And, I mean, even 2019 to 2022 was too long for the Elder God Wars.
Yeah.
And he said this was because the Sixth Age was tied together with RuneScape 3, which was, at the time, a reimagining of RuneScape, and the Sixth Age was the lore component of it. He said there was new skills, new tech. The new skills were going to be, of course, divination and invention. The new tech was, of course, going to be HTML5 with the new interface system, new lore, Sixth Age, new combat system, EOC, the new interface, the quest reworks, graphical reworks, and so on and so forth. And RuneScape 3 was meant to be as impactful as RuneScape 2. And this is what I love about these Mod Jack streams, is he speaks honestly about the company's past in this. He says, in retrospect, that wasn't the case. And it was fundamentally just a marketing term, and a lot of the aspirations were not realistic.
Yeah.
And
tell it like it is.
An example he gave was the Signature Heroes, and I want to bring Earth in on this, because I know we'd talked about Signature Heroes before, Ariane and such. But he said that the signature heroes were intended that they would come in with the novice quests and level with the players, and that the RS content would be brought up to date with the signature heroes. And he said they stopped this after 5 quests, and the signature heroes were intended to be the main cast, and they kind of just left them. And I feel like we were okay with that, and the existing players were okay with that. Earth, back when Six Age was getting started, did you have any strong affinity to any of the signature heroes?
They were always just... they were there.
I had
no connection to them whatsoever. I was fine with them being there, but I wasn't excited when I really saw them. I thought they did some neat stuff with it, but...
Yeah, and see, that's the thing.
I don't know.
They were kind of a way to hook new players in, but they never really fully capitalized on that. And that also explains, Tannis, these 5 quests that he's talking about, those were the ones that were fully voice acted that they stopped doing that with.
Yeah, and it was too bad. I mean, I liked the some of the signature heroes. Like, I really liked Ozan. I liked Ariane.
Ozan was neat.
Yeah,
Ariane's neat.
And I probably got even more into him because I played Chronicle quite a bit when it was out, it came out.
Right.
And that was all centered around them. So it seems like that would have been better RuneScape style stories.
Right.
Story arcs.
But and then the reason they weren't able to capitalize on it is that he says that the idea of these RuneScape 3 rebuilds were not fully scoped before they began. Before it was announced. So they announced the idea, but they didn't know how much it was going to take to do what they wanted to do the Sixth Age, to do the new interface, to do all the quest reworks and whatnot. And they would have been in a situation where they would have been able to do no game updates.
Yeah, that's just how they used to do things back in the day. They just threw a bunch of stuff at the wall, said, what do you guys think? Well, we want it all.
And in retrospect, we're back now to a more traditional sense than we were in 13, 14, 15 with this, looking at the kind of updates we get today.
We are, but at least it's a narrower focus, I think, with a more realistic outcome.
More realistic,
what they can do and what they can accomplish.
Yeah.
We're not hearing about a Church of God in 2022.
A Church of You, right?
Yeah, a Church of You.
as much as we love Mod Mark, that was never realistic. He said that there's a difference between the aspiration and what was able to be delivered, which you just said. And this was the big one. There was no exit plan for the Sixth Age. There was no exit plan for what started with the World Wakes. They didn't know how they were going to end that. And that's a problem.
I know it doesn't end well when you don't have an exit plan and you go into some kind of, let's say, conflict.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And he said that the Sixth Age redefined RuneScape hard. And this was, at the time, in concert with EOC, which, in his words, caused tremendous trouble for the game. But the lore impacts were far more subtle. And the lore impacts he talked about were the Sixth Age introducing faction-based gameplay, world events, the signature heroes, and the World Guardian. And with that, a lot of these things were picked up on, touched a little bit, and then they moved on from. And then the question came up in chat, would Jagex ever continue to do world events? And he said after 4 years of experimenting with choice, it became clear that it didn't work, and that world events are part of that same ideological change to the game's identity. World events are a big deal from the lore perspective, but it didn't lend itself very well to RuneScape's type of game. He said that doesn't mean there won't be ways to fix this in the future, but it was that idea of making RuneScape a faction-based game that was going to be causing problems, because he said that the way they had built it is they were going to have 7 different factions. And we all know, of course, Stow, World of Warcraft, ESO, and all the other MMOs. At most, those games have 2 or 3 factions, right? Not 7.
Yeah.
Not 7.
Yeah, and I thought the most interesting part of that was that, you know, this whole illusion of choice, and we knew that's what it was, and it wasn't consequential, and you felt that, and it's, you know, I was glad to have that validated.
Yeah, and that goes into what he said next about player decisions driving the game world. He said it's not that big of a problem in his own eyes, but the problem is that it was a popularity contest. They assumed that Zamorak was going to win World Event 1, but as we know, Sarah Doman won in a landslide. Which surprised them. Still surprises them to this day, it seems. Then we have the question from the ages, are we in the seventh age? And the answer to this is no, not really. And this is one that I want everybody to consider strongly as I read it. The formal statement is one that requires some messaging work and how it's presented and if it should actually be the case. What that means is that essentially the sixth age, as an age in Gilinor, never actually happened. The sixth age was a storyline, not an age. So parse that how you will.
Sounds like revisionist history to me.
A little bit.
Someone's been reading a little too much Reldo.
And he actually mentioned Reldo's Book of the Ages, that book that is considered canon with that. So, does this mean that if Jagex really wanted to, they would, in effect, scrub the Sixth Age?
Retcon the Sixth Age.
Varrockian propaganda.
It was all just a dream.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, that's one way they could definitely do it, because you look at that man in Catherby who sells the candles. What does he know about the Elder Gods? What does he know about Sliskay, right?
He's just a normal person.
I don't know why I chose the candle seller in Catherby, but there you go.
I was going to ask.
I don't know why I chose that. But I just want everybody to chew on that for a bit, that essentially the Sixth Age, as an age of Gilinor, never actually happened.
On the candle?
No, not the candle. That doesn't seem healthy at all. The idea that essentially the Sixth Age, as an age of Gilinor, never actually happened, and the Sixth Age was a storyline, not an age. Now, the next question was, what did the gods do for storytelling perspective, and his answer was that they raised the power level significantly, and the Sixth Age brought hugely important positive things like quality, and specifically the quality of quests, which I think we all agree with, that the quests of today are better than narrative-wise and just how grand they feel, they're better than what we had before, but I think we also lose something along the way from going back to like the elemental workshops of the world and the enlightened journeys of the world, those kind of quests. Yeah. So
agreed.
And see, that's the difference between you, Tannis, and Clan Quest members, right? Though I'm sure we can find some people in Clan Quest who will jump up and down at the modern era of questing too.
Probably.
And then the faction problem, we already talked about that, but I'll just expand on that a little bit to add another kernel of wisdom into it. When they were doing out all the god factions, they said the Sixth Age will encourage you to identify with a god and consider yourself a follower. But when they were starting the Sixth Age, the Godless was actually supposed to be the largest faction, because that's where the tie-in with divination and invention came from, and allowing players to make Guthix's choice for ourselves. And even the non-lore-focused players were more interested in the gods, and as a result, the godless immediately exited the story, which, I mean, makes sense, right?
Yeah.
And part of that wonders, had Jagex not gone on the choice bandwagon, what would have happened if they would have made it a simple choice of godless versus Sliskay's side back then, as they would probably do now? And then he said the reason they did that is that they have to make the content that players want, and factions encourage players to not care about the majority of the content being made. In that if you're a Zerosian, you probably wouldn't want to play too much of the Sarah Dominus quest. And that leads into the problem that first, someone would say the content isn't for me. And second, when you look at a quest, they'll focus on a single problem, who wins, but none of them could win if it wasn't something as simple as good versus evil or red versus blue.
Yeah.
And rather than...
We're here.
And world-ending stakes at every turn.
Yeah, yeah. And he said rather than leaning into that good versus evil, they went for a neutral point of view perspective where players' opinions could then factor into the play. And in other games' factions, there would be one Ceridoman quest and one Zamorak quest, which would make sense, I guess, but I don't necessarily know that Jagex would ever do something like that where they would lock players out of completing both sides of a story. So RuneScape's not a faction-based
game. Shield of Arav.
Mm-hmm.
Right, and that actually came up in the chat, too, that he said in hindsight it probably wasn't a good idea to do it that way for that quest, which they did undo later on, as all of us fresh starters have learned when we were doing Shield of Arav, that you don't need a partner anymore.
Yeah, thank goodness.
Same with Heroes Quest.
Yeah, true, true. And he said what essentially wound up happening was it was a player faction versus player faction conflict, and they set up all the factions, but there was no way to see that through. So from The World Wakes to Sliskay's Endgame, it was all of the gods and the followers versus Sliskay, Grigorovic, and Rolomia. And looking at that entire Sliskay's arc, Armadil, Bandos, and Zerosians didn't get resolution. Zamorakians are disappointed, and if this was decided as a vote by player choice, the question is, would it have been better? And the answer is probably not. So they go back to 2018, and that's when Mod Jack started bringing up the problem that there's no consistent enemy in the game. There's no antagonist, which when you think about the arc up to that point, that's true, because it was all very abstract. It was all very abstract. There's nothing.
Community is the antagonist.
Oh my god. You want to say that?
Yeah.
Okay. That's a hot take, but we'll allow that.
Is it a hot take?
And see, that's the thing. Part of me wonders, what would Sliskay's arc have looked like had there not been the player impact on the polls that they were doing? Would Jagex have still built all the quests that they did for that Sixth Age, or that part of the Sixth Age?
And the voices.
Yeah, there was a question about the voices at the end of the stream, but he actually didn't get time to answer it.
Oh.
Which, I feel like that's something you would like to pull on a little bit more.
Mm-hmm.
Because those voices were very clearly initially kind of framed to be Sliskay, right? But later on, they outright in one of the quests said that, no, we're not Sliskay. And you still don't believe that, do you? Anyways, where were we? He said Mod Raven worked very hard on Endgame, and it hurt him. Those were the exact words that Mod Jack used. It hurt Mod Raven because it did not deliver on the promises and it crossed out all the choices that were made prior and no one got to be in the right. And
that seems like it would have been right up Raven's alley, but...
Yeah. And apparently for Endgame, Mod Raven wrote thousands of words of dialogue that are all on the wiki for all the different choices that you can make in that quest. So you don't need to replay it. You can just go and find that in the RS wiki if you don't want to go and replay that quest.
Yeah, no, thank you.
Right. Mod Jack said that if he was acting his character out in real life, Mod Jack's roleplay would be as an evil wizard, an Evil Dave type character in the world of Gielinor.
Cracks.
Yeah. Then he said, answering the question, what if I don't like it? What if I don't like a piece of content? And then he said, what if Sliskay or Armadil or the World Guardian or the idea of his gods was his favorite concepts? And he says that, once again, you can't make decisions based on one player. Which is true. Then he talked about adaptation distillation versus adaptation decay, which is lots of big words there. Lots of big words. And effectively what this boils down to is the idea that as an IP adapts and changes into other formats, changes will be made to it and nothing will ever replicate the original. And the example he gave on this was The Simpsons being not the same show today as when it launched. And I think we can also see that in the modern incarnations of Star Trek, that if you compare Star Trek Discovery and Strange New Worlds to Next Generation and Deep Space Nine, completely different.
One of these
very
is not
bad,
like the others.
Downhill.
Hey, no. They're both good. They're both good.
Sell out.
You really should watch Strange New Worlds to start with.
No.
Wow. Yeah, that one's really good.
He said that if something changes and you don't like it, Mojang gets that, and Jagex can't always keep everyone happy. But the IP can't focus on a single thing that players like. And if the thing that you like for the game is not working, they can't keep doing it. Mojang doesn't like this, but in his view, that's the ultimate answer to this problem. And most of what was good is deliverable, and most of the people fell in love with the characters. People love Armadale because of his characteristics, not because he's a god. And he said that the best use of the gods in the Sixth Age was the cathedral dialogue and the maze dialogue in Sliske's Endgame, which can be read on the wiki. Which, we all love that cathedral dialogue as that was dropping from last July to last December. That was wonderful. And then one of the options to end the Sixth Age was to depower them, but with that they'd still occupy space and could potentially become the main cast of the game, which squeezed out any opportunity to look at anybody else. So then the question was asked, why make Azanadra a god and then banish him? Because he was a favorite character. People are wondering that, but now this frees up room to talk about other characters in that same space, like Trindine. And he said if the gods had stayed, they would have remained as the main cast within RuneScape. And he said the Elder Gods didn't work as antagonists because they couldn't have an identity and you couldn't fight them directly on that. So,
yeah.
Which, when you think about it, that all kind of makes sense about,
I don't know.
About the changes.
My mama didn't raise no bitch. I could take him.
Really? You could take a non-corporeal entity.
Yep.
You know, there's screenshots of Iron Man out there in the wilderness dying to jazz, right?
Yeah?
Yeah.
They're Iron Men. They're not real people.
Wow, another hot take with Earth. Okay, all right. And then Mojack called Darklight Danklight from the 200th quest.
Yeah. Tracks.
Yeah. But I don't know. Does this provide any resolution for you guys on ending the Sixth Age?
A lot of what we already thought. It, to me, it's just more, it's validation for what we already had put
already
together.
Knew.
Yeah.
Just that, you know, you can't really have the gods running around because they suck all the oxygen up in the room. You gotta, you know, kind of ground things with less powerful, less loud people, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, you think they made the right decision at the end of the day?
Yes.
Yes.
Back on these nice 6-month-long storylines rather than 3 or 10-year adventures.
Yeah, no, yes. Without a doubt.
Then I guess the last question I'll ask you guys on this was: doing the entire Six Age stuff something that should have been done from Killing Gothics onward? Or should they have just, after that, found a way to jump into the Zamorak Civil War? Keeping in mind, hindsight is 2020.
I mean, I feel like that's not really a fair question.
Well, would you rather imagine picking up a version of RuneScape, fork it in January 2013, and just start writing for it now? Would you like to avoid everything that happened between now and January 2013 in RuneScape? Or
no.
Or would you rather have the path of history that we did, I guess, is the question I'm asking.
I mean, I don't know. I don't think it's a fair question.
Right.
This is where we're at.
Because in that, you also work into the fact that so much of Prif and the existence of Prif and what we got for Prif revolved around the Sixth Age and bringing Saren back, right? So.
Yeah, exactly.
So it's kind of hard to go back on that, but I'd be interested to see what an alternate history of RuneScape would look like without the Sixth Age. So
I'd probably still be in the Fifth Age.
Yeah, yeah. It'd be like old school, there except with modern graphics.
Sixer deniers.
Wouldn't be what deniers?
I don't know. Six deniers, sixers, you know, birthers. No, tough crowd. Okay,
stage deniers.
Yeah. Oh, I see. Oh, I get it. I get it. Okay, yeah, that's about a 3 out of 5.
Really, I don't think it deserved that.
Oh, okay.
You are a kiss ass. So
wow. Okay. Our final piece of news of the week: Premier Club for 2023. The benefits of it have been announced, as well as the price. For $80, you can get the 12-month package, which works out to $6.67 a month. So once again, if you're paying anything more than the original grandfathered-in $5-a-month plan, Premier is worth it. You get all the same benefits as last year, plus the new Demon Hunter armor set and the Stalker pet. And that's Premier Club this year. Still no free Rune Metrics, which is unfortunate. I would jump up and down if that were the case. It's still a 50% discount. I honestly think at this point, Rune Metrics should be bundled with Premier Club.
No, I totally agree.
Because it's a very useful feature. And for me, Rune Metrics would be more useful than 150,000 loyalty points or Premier reward tokens, right?
Yeah, no, completely.
When's the last time you used loyalty points, Shane?
Exactly. Exactly. And that's why I'd like to see Rune Metrics included with this. But maybe next year. Maybe next year. But, and, you know, I also feel like the shininess of Premier Club has kind of faded over the years, too, because you can purchase it at any point of the year now, right?
Yeah.
The only benefit of purchasing it now is that you get the better price, $80 instead of $95. So,
yep.
I mean, if you're going to re-up, now's the time, but it's still purchasable at any point throughout the year. So, alrighty. Let's move on to what we've been doing and cover some wonderful achievements from Fresh Start. So, just your weekly reminder that we do have our friends chat, Bits Bytes. You can hang out in there if you're playing any of the games. If you're playing Mainscape, RS3, you're playing Fresh Start, or you're playing Old School, that's friends chat, Bits Bytes. But if you are on the Fresh Start side and you want a clan, we have a clan that we created called Fresh Quest. We're in there. Anybody can invite, so just join it and ask anybody online with two or more chevrons, and they'll be able to invite you to the clan. So that's Fresh Quest. But we do have some achievements this week, and I'm going to start off by naming you Tannis. FSW Tannis 79. You got 99 smithing on the 10th. Congratulations.
Thank you. Yes, it was fun. Two down. How many more can we go?
Right. We also have Jingle FSW1 with 99 Slayer on the 9th. TTV Hyacliff with 99 Herblore on the 5th. That's a big one. Herblore's difficult in Fresh Start. Jingles also got 99 Herblore on the 4th. And Fresh Soupy got 99 Prayer on the 4th as well.
Nice. Okay.
Then with that, we'll move into the main game.
Yep. So we have some achievements for the Mainscape. We've got Such XP Waste with 99 Slayer on November 9th. We have Battle/X with 99 Archaeology on the 8th. We have Donna with 99 mining on the 8th. And Maheen with 99 archaeology on the 8th.
Nicely done, everyone.
And then we also have Jack BLG with 120 farming, the outdoors, 99 magic, darkest night, 120 archaeology, Even 99 fishing, Terry Dax, 99 farming, and Mad Digger, 120 farming.
Nicely done, everybody. And we'll talk about how you wound up with 99 smithing in just a moment, Tanis. But Earth, I believe you have a pick of the week for us.
Yes. In shocking fashion, it's Taylor Swift's new album, Midnight. Specifically the 3 a.m. edition.
What's the difference between that and regular?
She released this one at 3 a.m. and it had like 7 more tracks.
Uh-huh.
And I think they were even better. I've included a link here. Take a listen if she's, you know, you listen to, love it. If it's not for you, that's okay. I'm not offended.
Yeah, I've been hearing lots of people listening to this in addition to yourself, mainly Thaxi and Mod Ramen. When we recorded his Behind the Crown episode, that's something he was listening to at the time. So,
love it.
I knew this would be pick of the week with you at this point, because whenever you're on and whenever Taylor Swift releases something, that always works its way into the schedule with this. So,
well, yeah, how could it not?
Yeah,
she's great.
Oh, and it's even got explicit tracks. I didn't know that she released tracks with explicit markers.
Oh yeah,
interesting.
She says swears.
Okie dokie then. Tanis, what have you been up to on RS?
Smithing.
Well, obviously.
Yeah, a lot of smithing. Still just loving Fresh Start. The mining and smithing is just such a wonderful rework, and they just made it perfect because I was able to, you know, I mined everything for my smithing. I only had to go back to get a little bit extra in the very, very end. So it all just worked out great. And also started working on wood cutting.
Ooh.
And thieving. Yeah.
You think you're going to get 99 or 120 in both of those before time's up?
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Because we got that double XP going for another 2 weeks on Fresh Start after the competitive period ends.
Yeah, yeah, I should have it.
We got a week and a bit of competitive left on that, so.
Yeah, plus, like, God, I'm going to have, like, 800 keys this year. So
right?
Do some things.
It's amazing how they just pile up, right? You don't realize how many you get from just playing the game, but they're there. Yeah. I'll go into my Fresh Start in just a little bit, but that's so good that you're able to accomplish your two main things, and you did it by doing it the way that you've normally do it, and it was mostly Iron Man, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, yeah, totally. I didn't buy anything.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
And that must feel pretty good.
It's awesome. I mean, it just reminds you just how
RuneScape's meant to be played.
Yeah. And just what a good job was done with that skilling rework.
Yeah, and really shows how we would love to have more like that at some point. I don't know what the plans are for the future on that, if such a thing is possible. But anything else before I go to Earth?
No, that was about it for me.
All right. What have you been up to, Earth?
I have been playing a medically inadvisable amount of RimWorld. Because a new expansion came out recently, and I have been loving that. So that has occupied much of my time lately.
As is the case with RimWorld, everybody I know who played it, you start playing it and then it sucks you in.
Yeah, I mean, casually 56 hours in 2 weeks.
Okay.
Like,
Okay.
a
And
little.
anybody who knows RimWorld will understand why. And I've heard some of the discussions about decisions you're making in that game, and it's quite interesting to hear just the one hear it from that one side with that. Give the listeners an example. I remember the guy with the mechanical arm, and everything was mechanical except for one organ.
Oh yeah, that, and then I have vampires, and then like basically thralls who live only to feed them. I
Sounds like
made
a
friends by sending shipments of organs to another camp.
And I think
You
with
know.
that underscores what RimWorld is, right?
A lot more than what that makes it sound
Yeah,
like.
okay, fair. Fair, fair, fair.
No, I love it.
All right, sounds good. As for me, lots of fresh start progress over the last week. I hit 111 farming. Yesterday, when we were recording last week, I was 108. So I got 109, 110, and 111. And one problem that I've run into with this is that we have a severe shortage of seeds in the economy to the point where it's actually difficult to buy magic and guarana seeds each and every day. And I've had to actually delay some of my farming runs because of that. And when the magic seeds do arrive, they're buying for anywhere between 450 and 525,000 GP per seed. I know, that's
Just
expensive.
like back in the day.
Yeah, exactly. But I'm lucky I'm able to fund it all with the flowers and the fruit that I harvest. So it's not all bad. I got the dinosaur breeding pen built on Anachronia, and I am now growing a Psytops dinosaurs, so that's going to be another source of XP coming in. That took way too long to get going, but I'm glad that I was able to do that eventually. And it took basically from fresh start day three until now to get that Anachronia going. It's a really, really long time on that. But aside from that, just been knocking off a few skill requirements around the edges to do some quests like the fairy tale or the fairy tale part 1, 2, and part 3 quests for the magic secateurs and magic watering can, as well as the requirements for the as a first resort quest, so I don't always need to call on people to go and get me meat from Ooglok. Because it's a pain buying meat from Knyphus when you can just, after that quest, buy it from Ooglok for bulk pricing. So my plan over the next couple of days is to get those quests done and nail that off the list. So, but yeah, other than that, things have been going well, and like you, Tan, is very much enjoying the fresh start experience still. And despite what people say, there's thousands, tens of thousands of people actually ranked on the high scores with that.
Well,
You look at the skills, most of them are now crossing 20,000. So, people are trying it and people are actually taking the time to get things ranked on it. So, not dead or a failure like people thought it was going to be, but
No, quite the opposite.
yeah. And I'm happy about that because that bodes well for next year's seasonal game mode, which will hopefully be something in the lens of a league type thing. But just a reminder, actually, one last thing on the what we've been doing section. Reminder to do your monthlies. I just realized today that I forgot to do Troll Invasion at the start of the month 10 days ago, and that's a nice helping of XP in a skill. So just keep that in mind, everybody. Troll invasion and the statues for construction XP. If you are looking for XP in those skills, keep those up for your monthlies. Those are some of our highest rated dailies on that. But I don't believe we have anything else for this episode. So with that being said, if you want to subscribe to the podcast, you can visit update.show/subscribe. We're on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google, Pocket Casts, Amazon, and more. Do subscribe. It'll ensure the podcast gets delivered automatically to you when it comes out. And we're also on YouTube at youtube.com/rsbnb. There you can find the nibbles in addition to the full video version of the show that we do put out. Like and subscribe there. It greatly helps the channel out. But do you guys have anything else before we go?
No,
I don't.
Alrighty then. Well, go tend to your herbs, everybody. And with that being said, we'll see you guys next week for another episode of RSBNB Update. Take care, everyone. See you then.
Bye, y'all.
See ya.